Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge. Text. So we're going to read from text number 1. It's on the board there. Title of this class is Freedom from Envy. But we're going to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita because Krishna is the most expert at freeing us from envy. So thank you all for coming. We appreciate that even you have to go through the austerity of wearing a mask or something like that just to be here. I'm not wearing a mask because then you wouldn't recognize who I am. You might think someone's pretending. Who's giving the lecture. And besides that, you probably couldn't hear me if I was speaking through a mask. You might not be able to hear me anyhow. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Tute Guyatamam Pravakshami Anushtuyave Jnana Vijnana Sahitam Yajgyatva Moksha Se Shubhat. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. So there's important things that just in the translation. One is that the qualification to receive the knowledge coming from Krishna is not to be envious of Krishna. Number two, that the knowledge is not only theoretical, but it should be experienced. And number three, if we experience this knowledge, then we'll become free from all our suffering, and we'll become happy. So anyone who wants to become free from suffering and become happy, Krishna is offering this opportunity to hear from him. Well, first of all, how to become non-envious of Krishna, and then be able to hear from him, and so we can become free from our misery, all the sufferings that we're going through, and become happy. So if anyone wants to become happy, according to Krishna, this is the formula. When the first time Prabhupada came to Buffalo was in 1969, and there were a few devotees in the temple at that time, and the first question Prabhupada asked us, that was the temple I joined in, he asked us, do you want to become happy? And since no one had ever asked such a profound question before, no one knew the answer. So Prabhupada had asked the question again, do you want to become happy? And no one knew the answer, so no one guessed. And Prabhupada looked very concerned. And so he asked a third time, don't you want to become happy? And then one devotee guessed and said, yes. And Prabhupada was relieved. He said, oh, that's very good. So everyone is trying to become happy, even if what we're doing is making us miserable. Still, some people, they can't differentiate between what's making them miserable and what happiness is. They enjoy their suffering. It's like sometimes someone gets sick and they're suffering, but they enjoy all the attention that's being paid to them. So they figure, I might as well stay sick and everyone will love me and pay attention. As soon as I get well, then everyone's going to neglect me. So let me suffer and be happy. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, as the devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized. Topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, for it is realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives them the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this ninth chapter matters that more confidential than any he has already disclosed. By the time we get up to the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it's assumed that we read the other eight chapters. And that we have, at least theoretically, we're accepting that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and other things that will be mentioned in the following paragraph. But for those who have not read this, the other eight chapters, here it's theoretically being stated, or Krishna is putting forward that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as we'll learn, as we have learned, and we will learn in the future, is a person who has all beauty, unlimited knowledge, unlimited wealth, unlimited strength, unlimited renunciation, and unlimited fame. That he's not an ordinary person. He's an inconceivably attractive person. Now, in the material world, everyone is attracted to something. But along with that attraction, many times there comes kind of envy. It's a love-hate relationship. If someone is extremely beautiful, we become attracted to them, and we hope something happens to them so that they're not so beautiful anymore. Or they'll get old like we are. They won't be so beautiful. They may be more beautiful than I am now, but in 20 years I'll be more beautiful than them. If someone has some wealth, we become attracted to them. And we hope that they'll give us some of that wealth. So that it's balanced out. And if someone has less wealth than we do, we also become attracted. Because we feel good that I'm wealthier than you are. Fold your hands and pay respects. And maybe I'll give you a little donation too. Like sometimes we meet people on the street and we say, oh, you're so intelligent. You know, when we're trying to sell them a book, you're so intelligent. You're the most intelligent person I've met today. And you're so attractive. You're so, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they go, yes, yes, it's all very true. At least someone, one of my devotees has finally recognized me on the street. So that now that you've become a devotee, how can I benedict you? Because I'm very powerful, therefore I can give out benedictions. So please tell me what benediction you want. And as Prabodhananda Saraswati said, well, please take this book, give up all your nonsense and give a donation. In other words, everyone wants to feel good, and part of that feeling good means they want to be recognized for being something special. And if someone can recognize them as something special, then they consider that this person also must be special because they recognize someone who's as special as I am. Others are blind to my speciality, but this person has some vision, and therefore I must benedict him. So whether one is superior or inferior or on the same level, everyone in this material world is in competition. Everyone wants to keep their superiority and be recognized for it. And those who are equal, they want to compete with each other so they become a little bit or a lot better than the other person. And those who are inferior, they want to become superior. And those who are superior to them want to keep them inferior. At least they become inferior. So at the same time, we recognize people's good qualities, and at the same time, we appreciate others, but at the same time, there's some idea that I should remain in my special position, and people should appreciate it and give me recognition for it. But if there's a God, theoretically, if there's actually a person who has unlimitedly beautiful, of course, it's words that we have, what can we say, you know, it's, we can show you a picture of Krishna, but whether we have the eyes to see his beauty is another thing. Or Krishna is unlimitedly famous or unlimitedly strong. Now, the only way we can actually see what opulence Krishna has which is unlimited, is his unlimited knowledge. And therefore he spoke Bhagavad Gita, beginning with the fact that our body is changing. Now, how many times have we gone to a university or a public school or watched on television and the teacher, learned, professor says, my dear students, my dear audience, I have something important to tell you. Please listen carefully. You're an eternal soul. You're not that body. Really? Yes, your body's changing, but you're not changing. You're the same person who had the baby body, who had the 15-year-old body, and has this body now. So you're eternal. So be happy. You're not going to die. This virus is not going to kill you. And even if someone kills the virus, anything else that comes along won't kill you. You're eternal. You're better than Superman. You're a super-duper man or woman. There's nothing to worry about. Ma suchaha. Now, how many times have we heard that? No, as soon as we're born, our parents go, goo, 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 you're on that body. Ooh, you're on that body. Everyone's pinching you, body, body, body. And you go, yes, I am his body. Bow down, parents. Worship me. Ooh. I'll smile for you. Hey, smiling, look. No, the whole so-called knowledge is being disseminated is literally hundreds of millions of books being written. There's so much. You can go on the internet, and every 15 minutes there's another news article about what's happening. So many movies, so many dramas, so many plays, and none of them tell you you're not your body. The most important thing, the most important information, is non-existence in modern society, practically speaking. And if you go on the street and you tell someone, my dear sir, you're not their body, you're not your body, they'll get insulted. What do you mean I'm not my body? What are you calling me? You're a spirit soul. What are you telling me? I'm a ghost or something? And if you ask a question in a university, my dear learned professor, what is the duty of a person who is about to die? Immediately he'll call 9/11. We have a terrorist in the class. He's threatening me. He asked me, what is my duty now that I'm about to die? So people have misunderstood what knowledge is. And if you tell people you shouldn't be envious, they say, why are you envious of me? They never think they're envious of anyone else. They think everyone's envious of them. That's the only reason why the world isn't going well, because of enviousness against them or their friends. But actually, the point is, Krishna has spoken perfect knowledge, and why can't people hear it? Why aren't they interested in this knowledge? Oh, because basically, if it's true, then Krishna he might be God. And the last thing people want to hear, most people, they've been trained up, the last thing they want to hear is that there's a God. I'm all right, there's a God. Well, that's all right. But who's God? Well, you're not God. What do you mean I'm not God? I can accept there's a God, but I have to be in the running. Maybe I'm God. Who knows? I got an A in my class today, so I'm getting close. So the last thing most people want to hear is that there is a God and it's not them. That there's someone superior and you can compete with them. And then that's beginning. Krishna has given us some preliminary knowledge. And then he says, if you want to realize that you're eternal, you have to follow my instructions. You have to control your mind and senses and engage them in a certain way, and then the illusory energy will go away, and at least you'll realize you're not your body. People think, my God, I got to surrender to him? I got to follow his instructions? Or else I'm going to be in this bodily concept of life? Well, I tell you, I'm not going to follow anyone's instructions. I'd rather remain in the bodily concept of life and suffer than surrender. Or as one Boy George has one song, bow down, mister. People say, I remember in America, I don't know about here, the culture, but to bow down is it's considered a great degradation. If you bow down before someone, people go, oh, what? You're demeaning yourself. What happened to your self-esteem? Why are you bowing down before this person? Why are you surrendering? Be yourself, be a man, be a real woman, and fight. Don't surrender. Show your individuality. I'll never surrender. I'm going to shine and everyone's going to see me. One day, as every child in America dreams and is told, don't worry, if you fight and you work hard and you study and you do everything right, then one day you'll be the president. So the only way to solve that problem is you need around, 100 million presidents. Then everyone could be the president. But that's people's understanding. You can become the supreme. You can become the topmost. You can become the big guy. Now, how do you do it? You have to struggle. You have to do austerity. You have to go to school. You have to learn the rules. You got to surrender to the math teacher, to the physics teacher, to the chemistry teacher, to the French teacher. You got to surrender. They say jump, and the only question you ask is how high. And if you question them, then they just push you down. F minus. Oh, please, I'll surrender. No one will love me. So everyone surrendered. The question is who we're going to surrender to. So Krishna is saying you have to follow my rules if you want to realize you're eternal. And if you want to follow other rules, you may get something else. You'll get something else in the material world, but you won't get eternal life. And then people surrender. Even Hiranyakashipu, he surrendered. Hiranyakashipu was a big, big, powerful personality, known as Asura. He wasn't very godly. And he surrendered to what Krishna said, austerity. He stood on the tip of his toes for 120 years of the demigods. He didn't eat. He didn't breathe. He didn't do anything. He just let the moths, the ants, and everyone else just eat his body away. And he surrendered. And believe me, he got some realizations. You could also get the same realizations if you go through the same process, because he had to enter into his bones and live there. His life heirs entered into his bones, and he was living in his bones. So believe me, he realized he wasn't his body, because he didn't have a body anymore. He did have a bunch of bones, but couldn't do much with him. So he got direct realization, he's not this body, and he even preached it to his relatives. After his little baby brother, Hiranyaksha, was killed, he preached to his relatives, you're not your body, you're a spirit soul, you're eternal, Hiranyaksha is still existing, I don't know where, but we'll all join him soon, so don't lament. And they all became peaceful. Yes, Hiranyakashipu, he's a good scholar, he knows what he's talking about. And they became peaceful for a while. So even Hiranyakashipu had to go through a process to realize he's not the body. But he didn't go further than that, and therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna states something further, that there is a personality who's controlling the whole universe. Now, some people, especially the impersonalists, they say that there's intelligence behind the universe. They have this science called intelligent design. They say the whole universe is governed by intelligence. But they never say there's an intelligent person, behind it. That would be too much. There's just intelligence. Imagine if you wrote something intelligent and they said, the intelligence from the universe has written this. You go, wait a second, I wrote it. No, I'm sorry. It came from the intelligence from the universe. Just manifest itself on this piece of paper. There's no person behind it. It was too intelligent. And even worse than that, as I said, there was one priest. He read the Bhagavad Gita. He read some of Prabhupada's books. And he gave a lecture before his congregation. And he said, this philosophy of the Hare Krishnas is so good, is so perfect, that only the devil could have made it. So this idea of this is intelligence, that's why the sun's coming up at a certain time, that's why it goes down at a certain time, that's why we're eating food, and without our conscious endeavor, it's being digested, assimilated, and parts of it are being eliminated. All going on without our conscious endeavor, all very, very intelligently. And the idea is, what is the conclusion of the impersonalist? Oh, it's all coming from the universal intelligence. It's not a person. A person has intelligence. No, not it's the universal intelligence. So that's some recognition that there is intelligence governing the universe. But Bhagavad Gita teaches there's a person who's governing the universe. In the 15th chapter, Krishna will say, I'm moving the planets in their orbits. Now, if it's just the universal intelligence doing it, if the scientists or whoever figures that they've discovered the universal intelligence, well, why don't you ask the universal intelligence to, you know, move one little sun over the Arctic, over the North Pole at least, and help out the Eskimos? If they already figured out where the universal intelligence came from and what it's doing, why don't they just ask the universal intelligence to do something practical? Help out the Eskimos. Well, with all your intelligence, why don't you make a little sun? You have intelligence. Why don't you borrow a little of universal intelligence and make a little tiny sun and just put it in an orbit around this room here? We can save so much money on electricity and heat during the winter. But they can't do that. They don't know where the intelligence is coming from. They don't know who created the sun. They don't know who's putting the planets in their orbit. They don't know how digestion is going on. They don't know how so many things are going on. But they just claim it's all some unknown intelligence. It's unknown, but it can be known, according to Bhagavad Gita, if we surrender to that intelligence, who's within our heart. Because after all, we're desiring, we want to know where we left our keys, we can't figure it out, and the only way of doing it is we've become very humble. We start to say, where to go? Please tell me. I'll do anything. I'll surrender. They left it in the car. Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. I'll see you later. So we have to think hard, and we have to really consider, and we're praying, and then it doesn't come. Then suddenly it comes, and we remember it. And we take all credit for it. And sometimes we're trying to forget something. We can't forget it. Oh, this is bothering. It's bothering. I can't forget it. We can't forget it. And then we're just praying, please, I want to forget it. And I want to forget it. And then we forget it. And then we think, what did I forget? I can't remember what I forgot. So we're not in control. Even our intelligence is being supplied to us. But Bhagavad Gita teaches us how we can recognize that Supreme Person if we're not envious of him. If we want to be the source of all intelligence, we say something important, something recognized, something appreciated, and we want to get the credit for it, and we don't want to give the credit to the person who's giving intelligence to all living entities, then we'll never understand who's actually the source of our intelligence. And then sometimes we'll accept good intelligence, and then sometimes we'll accept bad intelligence because we don't know what the source of good intelligence is. And then beyond that, Krishna will explain about love and devotion. If we're envious of someone, materially envious, then there's no question of love. If we're competing against each other, who's going to become the best, who's going to become the greatest, rather who's going to become the best servant, how am I going to make you happier than you can make me happier, how I can serve you better than you can serve me, that kind of competition is very nice. But if the competition is, I'm going to be recognized, I'm going to be the controller, I'm going to be worshipped, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be that, then everyone else we're looking at is simply a object of my worship. In other words, object so that they can worship me, they can recognize me. That I don't want them to come up because then they become as good as me, or they may become better than me. I don't want to be on the same level of these people. I want to become better than them. And those who are better, we can drag them down. And there we get them on the same level. Communism. And if you don't want to be on the same level as me, you think that you deserve to be better, then we'll burn you down. You got up wherever you are by some intelligence or some good luck of being born in a certain family, but we know better because we're more wise than we are, than you are. We know how to drag you down. That will make us happy. Drag you down to the same level of unhappiness and misery that we're in. That's our knowledge. So actually, love can only be there when we become non-envious. But if we love the Supreme Person, who's the source of everything, and see things properly, then we can actually appreciate people are on a higher level. And we can take help from them, and instruction and example for people who are actually on a higher level, if we become non-envious. And for those who are on the same level as us, we could try to assist them, even to become better than we are. Because the better they become, the more better we'll become. And for those who are lower, then we should try to help them become higher. Even if they surpass us, that's very good. Because then we'll learn from them how to become a better servant of Krishna. So the idea is that Krishna, he has his place eternally. No one can compete with him. He's the source of all beauty and knowledge and fame, renunciation, and everything desirable. He's also everyone's best friend. He loves everyone, and he's the source of all pleasure. So if we worship him, then our original love, tendency to love everyone will be there, because he already loves everyone. So if we take shelter of him, then we'll also love everyone. If we adopt the same mood he has, the same vision he has, the same activities he has, then we'll simply love everyone. And we'll become non-envious, and all the misery which comes from our being envious of people, because all the misery ultimately is due to our vision of things, dissatisfaction. I don't have enough, or I had so much and I lost it, and therefore I'm unhappy that I lost it. I may never be able to get it back, but I'm just lamenting all the time. I used to be 20 years old, and now I'm 90, and I'm just lamenting, oh, if only I was 20 years ago. I was so happy when I was 20. Actually, when I was 20, I was hoping to be 30. When I was 30, I was hoping to be 20 again. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Tanistita shuti tam tanuvang manopir. If one is peaceful, if one can accept his present circumstance and take advantage of it for advancing spiritually, then he can actually be peaceful and happy and under all circumstances. And even there's some material misery, but one will not be disturbed by the misery. Just like if one has a car, if the car is not working well, then one can understand that it's not oneself that's not working well. One will not become overly disturbed. Oh, my car is not functioning. I must be having a heart attack. Quick, call the mechanic, the repairer. I think I'm going to pass out. No, it's the car. It's not oneself who's going through the difficulty. And inevitably, we understand every car breaks down after some time. No car drives for 100 million miles or kilometers before it breaks down. And no one cries. There's no, even if you go to a junkyard where they put all the old cars, no one goes there and cries, oh, my automobile, it was so beautiful, and now it's dead. The engine's dead. It doesn't move anymore. And they put a little sign, a little cross next to their automobile. And every year they come and visit the junkyard. Have darshan of the automobile. And if it was a very good automobile, they even sell the parts. Or they give the parts away. It's called organ donations. So other automobiles can run healthy. But no one thinks like that. Because actually we're not the automobile. So we're not this body either. So this body is destined to break down today or tomorrow. But we're not going to break down. So we should actually make ourselves healthy. We should keep this body healthy also. But the most important thing is the health of the soul, not simply lament about the gradual deterioration of this body. We should see that the soul is developing even if the body is diminishing. And the only way the soul can develop is by coming back to Krishna. Krishna is like the whole fire, the big fire, and we're like little sparks. So if the little spark gets closer to the big fire, then it gets healthier because it starts to glow again. But to get back to the big fire, we have to love Krishna. In the spiritual world and spiritual consciousness, is only loving exchanges. Krishna unconditionally loves everyone. He's fulfilling our desire even to imitate him. He's providing the material world so we can be here and play that we're God. He's so kind, he's given us this playground to go around, that I am Romeo and I am Juliet. I am Tarzan. I am Jane. I'm Mickey Mouse. I'm Minnie Mouse. He's given us this big playground. Ultimately, I am Radha and I am Krishna. So let's get together. We can have our eternal lila for at least 2 months until I find some other gopi to do my rasta dance with. So everyone in the material world is a soul, and the soul will become healthy and happy if it gets closer to Krishna. But in order to become closer to Krishna, what we have to do is simply hear about Krishna. Try to hear from Krishna, from those who like Krishna, at least trying to love Krishna. And just by hearing, Krishna will give us the intelligence. As Krishna says, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. If we simply make an effort to hear, then Krishna will give us the intelligence to understand what we're hearing. He'll give us the intelligence to understand that we're not this body. He'll give us the intelligence to understand that he's God, that he's the one who's controlling the entire universe. That bad things are not happening to good people. Or as one rabbi, whose name was Krishna, by the way, one rabbi was wondering, why are bad things happening to good people? So his idea was that actually God is a good person, and therefore generally bad things wouldn't happen to good people. But because God is so old, he's become senile. And therefore he doesn't really know what's going on anymore. And therefore, things are out of whack. Sometimes good things happen to bad people, and bad things happen to good people, because he just doesn't know anymore. You got to forgive the old guy. He's doing the best he can. He's trying to clutch the earth, but he already has Alzheimer's, and his Parkinson's, and his hand is shaking. Oh. The younger angels are trying to convince him to retire. So in the future, things will go better. But he's a little stubborn, so we have to be a little patient. So we have to understand that actually everything is going on perfectly. We don't have to worry about it. We don't have to be backseat driver and tell Krishna, Krishna, there's so many bad things going on. Why don't you correct them? Of course, we should try to correct them, because the worst thing that's going on is that people have forgotten who they are. They've forgotten that they're eternal. They've forgotten God. They've forgotten how things are being controlled here, how things are going on. They've forgotten about that there's a consciousness that they could be in where they could be blissful in any circumstance in the material world. And even at the time of leaving this body, they can go to an eternal spiritual world. Now, the eternal spiritual world may be beyond our comprehension right now. It may be beyond our experience. But at least the fact that we're eternal and that we're not the controllers of this universe and that we should follow the instructions of the controller to actually realize who we are, to realize what's going on here. That much we should do. That much is within our capacity as human beings. And we'll only do that if we hear, and we try to hear submissively. Not if we can't be submissive, if we're always thinking, I don't want to accept this knowledge because it'll make me less. That I'll have to, I'm surrendering to Krishna, and just like my mother never wanted to hear about Krishna. Only when I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, they couldn't figure it out. So they went to some meetings to find out, what is this all about? But then in the, you know, like 40 years I was visiting her, she never asked me a question about Krishna. She didn't want to hear anything about it. And then one day she said, well, actually I'm interested. Well, can you tell me something about Krishna? And then she said, no, don't tell me. Please don't tell me. Whatever you do, don't tell me. Although she did believe in the good fairies and things like that. So just by the fact that we're sitting here hearing something about Krishna, trying to hear, that is surrender. That is the process of becoming non-envious. And the more we try to do that, then the more we can accept Krishna as actually God and that everyone else is an expansion of his energies, then the more we'll become non-envious. And if we hear that knowledge and do what Krishna wants us to do, then Krishna tells us that not only he'll give us the intelligence to understand it, to realize it, to understand how Krishna is wonderful, how wonderful Krishna is, that we'll actually experience Krishna. And then the more we experience Krishna, the more we understand Krishna, the more we realize Krishna, then the more we'll realize how nice everyone actually is. And that there's no need to be envious of anyone and compete with anyone because everyone is eternally nice, we're nice, and everyone is nice, and we can appreciate them and love them, and that's how everyone will become supremely nice. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? There's always a moment of silence when we ask questions. Yes. Okay.
Could I just at least ask you for advice how to get rid of the wish that everyone would love you?
Well, get everyone to love you. The way of doing that is become a perfect servant of Krishna and work for everyone's benefit. And then most people who are sane will love you. And if the demons hate you, if the people who are against Krishna hate you, well, that's a very good sign. That means at least they're recognizing you. Otherwise, they'd never even notice you. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.